っと食べるの。
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Peach and the Colonel. I am the Colonel, and right here with me is...
Peachy!
Yay!
This is the second podcast we've done tonight, so it may be a little loose. I'm delighted to announce we have another guest with us in the studio today. His name is Loz Blaine.
G'day.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Loz? What do you do?
I'm your brother.
Amongst other things. What do you do? What do you do with yourself?
I do a lot of things with myself, but primarily...
Don't talk about that one. The other things.
The main things I do is, number one, I'm a technology journalist and video producer for gizmag.com, which is about to be renamed, hopefully not before this episode comes out. But yes, gizmag.com, and I write about all things emerging technology and try and fit in as many motorcycles as I can because I'm a motorcycle fiend. I love my motorcycles. And
how did you come to love motorcycles so much?
Well, you were there, Colonel. We were in Thailand. Should we go right back? I believe when I was about 3 years old, my granddad built a backyard motorbike out of a lawnmower engine and some wheelbarrow wheels and some box frame steel.
Wow.
Just welded some stuff together.
Just some crap, yeah. And my dad used to put me on his lap and hoon me around the yard at my grandparents' place. And there's pictures of that. Did you ever get a ride on that thing? Yeah.
Certainly not solo. I was way too little. But...
Oh, yeah, me neither. I was only a little tacker.
Yeah.
And then I think when our other brother Shonky was about to be born, my mum said to me, I'm going to go into hospital soon, and you're going to have a little brother or a little sister soon. And I said, "Don't want brother, want motorbike." So I knew
it's
I liked
a true passion.
Then.
Yeah,
but I never actually rode one until I went to Thailand with the Colonel on a very eventful trip. we handed over our passports to this lady at the motorbike hire shop. And none of us, we didn't know what did what. We didn't know what to twist and what to grab and what levers or buttons did what. So we sort of wheeled these bikes around the corner so this woman couldn't watch us not know how to turn them on. And then went to a supermarket car park and figured out the clutch and figured out the gears and the throttle and the brakes and what they all did. And then I've got a photo from about 10 minutes after that. We were in singlets and thongs and shorts, and we're going 100 k's an hour down.
Protective singlets.
Oh, so yeah, exactly. Thongs. Yeah, Kevlar.
And safety thongs. Yeah.
Protective sunglasses.
And we're hooning down this highway at this potholed Thai highway at about 100 k's an hour. And I took the photo while I was riding of our mate Kanga Dave, big Aussie kangaroo, and the funny thing is, I've been riding sort of 15-something years now, much more, more seriously than that. And I wouldn't do that these days. I wouldn't hold a camera while wearing no safety gear. No helmets. No. We had sunnies, though.
Yeah, sunnies would have helped you
They were sort of helmets, but they weren't like the sort of helmets that would protect you in case of a
crash. Any case, no, exactly.
They were a token helmet.
Yeah.
Okay. I was in Vietnam the day they introduced mandatory helmet laws in Vietnam. And everybody cracked the shits over there because they really wanted to they thought they can't hear what's going on with a helmet on.
Right.
But, virtually nothing changed the day that the helmet law came in. Everybody just still didn't wear helmets. But you started then, over the next couple of weeks, to see people, putting ice cream buckets on their heads and all sorts of stuff.
Look, I just want to do the right thing.
Anything that would tick the box. Yeah, yeah. Oh, goodness.
After all, this is a rocky road we're riding on. So, yeah.
You're like that. You're like that.
So much more where that came from. Yeah.
So where's your passion led you? I saw this evening you had a new motorbike at the front of your house?
Yeah, well, so part of what I do with Gizmag is make videos, and that really started by making motorbike review videos, usually with sort of questionable, filthy humour in them and things like that, and they've sort of developed a bit of a following. Mm-hmm. So from time to time I get to ride all sorts of incredible machinery. I've ridden all the fastest bikes in the world now, including the fastest bike in the world, which is a freaking electric bike. Oh. And that thing just...
Ooh. Oh, we've got Siri talking again. Siri's She's talking in. On my side of the room again.
Good. That's a difference because she usually talks to me.
She talks to you, doesn't she?
I'm going on do not disturb mode because Siri gets a bit attached to me.
Yeah, fair enough.
So sorry, the fastest bike in the world is electric.
It's electric. It's called the Lightning LS218 and it's named after... This is the fastest production bike, mind you, as measured on the Utah Salt Flats at Bonneville. Yep. It went 218 miles an hour, which is 350 k's an hour. And Jesus. I'm here to tell you, it's about six pairs of undies per hour in terms of the acceleration. It's
so unbelievable. I read somewhere like the Bugatti, the Veyron.
Mm.
At top speed, the tyres last 15 minutes max. Is it similar with something like the Lightning?
Yeah, it would be. Because you're putting not only... I mean, I think it makes... When I rode this bike, it made 200 horsepower. Now, sorry, this is a long way to answer this question, but 200 horsepower is about standard for what you get with a superbike these days. It's about nearly twice the power of my family station wagon in a vehicle that weighs about probably one-eighth of the weight. So that's your standard superbike that you can go and pay $20,000 for and walk out and go 300 k's an hour straight on the road today.
Yeah.
With electrics, the amount of horsepower is kind of a little bit deceptive because the torque of these things is absolutely ludicrous. So a 250 horsepower electric bike would probably feel like a 350 horsepower petrol bike. So
torque,
Yeah, so when you're going that fast, if you're going 350 k's an hour, you've got to push against the force of the wind. So imagine, you know, when you're holding your hand out the window on the freeway and how powerful
that buffeting
that wind is at
feeling.
100 k's an hour.
Yeah.
So it actually goes up, I think it's like by the square of the speed instead of...
Right.
So at 200 k's an hour... That's a really powerful force, and that's a great feeling. I'm here to tell you. but at 300 or 350 k's an hour, the wind is almost like a brick wall.
Yeah, if you're on fighting through it.
Yeah. If you're on a motorcycle and you pop up from behind the
shield,
the fairings, the aerodynamic fairings, at 350 k's an hour. It's like you're being punched in the face. It's just bang, this massive force. So your tyres have to push against that much wind resistance when you're doing 350 k's an hour. So it's like you're constantly having someone pushing against the front of the bike with all that force of the wind. So, yeah, tyres would tear themselves apart at those kind of speeds.
It's crazy. I remember being on a cruise ship once and we were in like 9 or 10 metre seas and... And I just wanted to see what was going on because they battened down the hatches and, you know, all the doors shut to the outsides. And, I mean, you've seen it. You see, we had this night and the waves were crashing on the doors so hard that the doors were opening, breaking the locks and the water was flowing through the boat. It was crazy. And I managed to get myself up to the top floor and sneak out a thing. I just wanted to see what the sea looked like. And I just poked my head around the edge of the thing and it was literally like I got slapped in the face by the wind.
Yeah.
Just from, and that was moving, I mean, cruise ships move pretty slow and they're probably going maybe 9, 10 kilometres an hour, I don't know, maybe 20, 30.
Yeah, but the wind's obviously moving much faster.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, 300 k's, it'd be insane.
Well, the Veyron is a piece of engineering, right? So that car, I think they said it took them... They had to make about 400 horsepower to make a car that could go 300 kilometres an hour. But to go 400 kilometres an hour, they needed 1,000 horsepower. Like you have to multiply the amount of power you can make by a huge amount or make the car as aerodynamic as possible or both.
Wind resistance and then also friction that you're dealing with and gravity and... Yeah.
So of all the like gadgets you've sort of written about and or latest technology you've written about, what do you reckon's the most interesting kind of give us your top three gadgets.
I'd like to point one out maybe that you'd like to talk about is the Real Touch. I think that's one that got you a lot of traction online. It's how I became a big fan of your work.
Yeah.
Real Touch would probably be on the list. I just got to say, though, there is just a constant stream of amazing stuff happening out there. And, like, in my job, I get the ability to meet some people who are doing some just patently, ridiculously amazing stuff.
Yeah.
So that list is probably going to change on a kind of three-monthly basis. I reckon something new would pop in that's just like, oh, my God.
This,
like,
usurps everything.
Real Touch was a couple of years ago. We had a we got a letter from a company called Real Touch that makes this it looks a bit like a melon, doesn't it? It's kind of about the shape of a melon, and it's got a hole in one end, and you stick your doodle in. I stick my doodle in. You wouldn't stick yours in there, Peach. You stick your doodle in. It's a sex toy for men, and what it does is it plugs into your computer, and there's specially coded porno movies such that whatever happens to the penis on the screen happens to your penis in real time. So inside the device...
This is like quite a sort of... It's like blow-up doll 4.0 sort of thing.
This is, we're moving towards the sex robot.
Right,
of the future.
Okay.
I'm here to tell you, I had a really good time with the Real Touch.
Yeah.
And I would definitely put my hand up to test every successive generation of this technology, except for the fact that our advertisers ganged up against it, even though it got hundreds of thousands of views on Gizmag, and we can't actually advertise next to that kind of content. So we've had offers of other similar devices to test, but much to my disappointment, I can't do it because we can't advertise on those stories. So.
Oh, wow.
And people also use Gizmag as a, like a lot of school teachers will use it to keep their kids up on like latest technology and stuff. And so we got a few emails saying, hey.
Hang on a second.
What's this year? I mean, the kids thought it was great.
Yeah.
This is kind of what interests me, and we've talked about this a bit about the podcast and about the podcast being sort of one of the last forms of media where there isn't that kind of restriction. There's no...
Well, there is, depending on who your advertiser is.
Exactly. Yeah. And, I mean, the only reason we can talk about whatever we want to talk about is because nobody's advertising.
Not yet, anyway.
We're not selling spots.
By the way, we're drinking a 2012 Reserve Grenache Barossa Valley.
And it's spectacular.
And what is it?
It's the Shield Estate.
Edgar Shield Reserve.
It's fantastic.
Very pleasant.
And if they want to sponsor us, that's cool too. But but we're not going to stop talking about sex toys. That's that's going to be in the contract. You talked earlier about some of the people that you meet that are doing amazing things, and we've talked a bit about some of the people you met in California and some of the wackos that are creating this stuff. What do you think it is about these people? What drives them? Is it an ego thing? Is it a competition amongst their peers thing? Like, what do you think drives them to break all this new ground in whatever they do?
You don't mean in Real Touch specifically, like in area. You just mean in technology in general.
That's an example of a person breaking ground and coming up with something interesting. But no, just in general, like, you've met a lot of inventors. A lot of people are out there pushing the envelope. Why do you think they're doing it, and what drives them?
Vastly different person to person. Let me see. Like, I was speaking to a guy this week who invented the Neura headphone. Did you catch?
Oh, yeah, I saw that your article on that.
Specialized sonic experience.
Yeah, so this is a set of headphones that when you first put them on, they fire some sound into your ear and then use a little microphone to read what sound comes out, and they tune themselves to your ears. So we had this set of headphones up in the office, and everybody put them on, and they sounded fabulous to everybody. But if I took them off you while you were listening to them, they'd sound crap to me, because there's this massive variance in hearing between one person to another.
Yeah.
It's huge. That's why some people like Sony headphones, other ones like Beats by Dre, and some people like Sennheisers, whatever.
Yeah. No one likes Beats by Dre because of the sound. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah, they like it because LeBron the wanker James wears
them. Are they no good?
No, they're some of the most overpriced rubbish on the market. Right, they're a fashion item that happens to be a speaker as well. But anyway.
Right. So Kyle from Noora, who came into the office, he's he's one of the inventors behind this thing. And this guy was driven by I can only go by my impressions of them, but he seemed to be driven by two things. One, he had a lot of knowledge about the way ears work from working in a ear, nose and throat hospital and doing work for cochlear implants and deaf people and stuff like that. And two, he was also driven, he was coming at his invention from a very respectful, humble place by saying, we want to make headphones that get out of the way of the musician's intent. So we want exactly what the sound engineers who mixed this stuff
were aiming for.
Yeah. What they heard, that's what we want to deliver to you. And we don't want our headphones to have a sound. We want them to be
your sound.
Your sound. We want to. Yeah. We want them to just take away the sensitivities and deficiencies in your own hearing spectrum, and take all that stuff away, and just make a headphone that is amazing for everybody.
Mm.
So he came at it from a very humble place.
Mm.
There's certainly other guys I can think of who come at it from a place of, you know, everybody else is stupid, and I know better. And half the time they're right as well. Mm, like there has to be, like, there is a bit of a conceit about it. But at the same time, they're coming up with stuff that makes the world a different place. But one thing I'll definitely say is that, and I think it goes across to a lot of different areas in life as well. If you are really, really good at something and you have really got something to offer the world, chances are you are probably going to be a very generous person with your time, and you are, like, yeah, the kind of people who really have an attitude and all that sort of stuff generally don't have a lot going for them. Most of these guys, even if they are ego-driven, are really nice people to hang out with and talk to.
Mind you, like, you're not going in there as the average person either. You get the privileged position of going in, reviewing a product or writing a story. Like, these people are trying to give you the best version of themselves.
They just liked me.
No one likes you.
Jesus. That's the power of marketing strikes again.
Wow. No, but honestly, in every relationship with you know, you either start on the top step or the bottom step. You either have to earn your respect or someone's automatically giving it to you. I think you would come in with some sort of privilege.
I have never once thought about that, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys, even if they're not necessarily hawking a product, they know that I'm going to go away and you know, weave whatever happens between us into a story and try and make it fun and
I'm going to be so interesting today.
Yeah. Well, I guess so. Well, you've just popped my bubble there. I thought all these guys were super cool, but no, they were just totally sucking on my doodle. Wow.
How was that for you?
Yeah, I need to go back to the Real Touch. That seems like a good segue.
So, the other thing that I didn't mention about the Real Touch is that there's a companion device for women.
Mm.
Unfortunately, it's not going to do much for you, because all it does is it's like a big old dildo with, like, touchscreen technology on it, so that whatever you do to the dildo happens to the guy's knob. And what they're doing is they're giving it to couples, for instance, military soldiers, whatever, who've gone away overseas. They give one to the girlfriend back home.
It's like the ultimate phone sex.
Yes, and yeah. I had the pleasure and the privilege of humping girls on four different continents using this stuff, and it is absolutely it is the closest thing I've ever experienced to actually having sex with someone. It is really intimate. It's really it feels like it should feel. It's unbelievable.
So what's the mechanism inside the Real Touch that's delivering this stimuli?
Well, it's not very romantic to take it apart and have a look at it, but it's got two rubberized belts with grooves on the belt, which can, like tank tracks, like rubber tank tracks.
And this is meant to feel like the inside of a vagina?
It's got
two rubberized flowers. That's hilarious.
I know this isn't a visual medium, but Peachy's face
during this
description is just wonderful. I can go and get it. You guys can take a photo of it and put it on the website if you want.
To me, that'd be great. Yeah. To me, that like that vision, it's suddenly like I'm seeing sort of
the inside of your own fanny.
Yeah, in a whole new light, really, that I could be replaced by sort of rubberized straps is quite. I'm just quite disturbed by that. I thought you were going to say like a vacuum.
Like you girls have had all the best sex toys for years. You've got things that buzz and jiggle. You've got bees in a box. Cleopatra used to use a box full of bees. Hold that on her clacker. You've had the bloody washing machines to sit on. You guys have had all the fun. Now finally, us fellas are starting to get our own back.
Yeah, yeah. So it's got these sort of two.
Two rubberized tank track things. Yep. It's got heating.
And they move like they go round?
Yes, independently. Yep. Okay. So they can. Oh, so if the woman licks up the underside of the doodle on the screen, only the underside of your doodle is going to feel it and it will move in the right direction as well.
Wow. Oh, so it's more like a tongue. Like it feels like a tongue.
It's just a.
Rather than a. Just a sensation.
Frictiony thing.
Frictiony thing.
I'll bring it in later. You can stick your finger in.
Yep.
It's got heating pads on the sides to that kind of warm the whole thing up.
Yeah.
It's got a hole at the aperture which can tighten or loosen, and it's got an automatic lube dispenser. So
So depending on how
thought of everything.
How wet the person is on the other side depends on how much lube is released, or is it just released for your general enjoyment?
You can kind of hit a button
and
just go, I really need a little bit more of that. Now, if I'm perfectly honest, and the lube dispenser function didn't work, so I just tipped a whole bunch on my knob before I stuck it in.
Right, okay.
And that was fine.
Yeah.
That was fine.
Okay, good. Yeah. And can Here's I ask thing, like a really technical question about this now?
Yeah.
When you come, do you come inside the machine and then where does it go?
Yes. And it goes in the sink because you take it straight to the sink and wash it out.
Oh, okay, but so there's no like little receptacle reservoir for you. Like I was imagining it sort of sucking it away.
There's all this lube all over the thing and this is all gummed up.
Wow, you know,
it doesn't need to be cleaned out. Straight to the sink, give it a wash. It's all washable. The electronics are all shielded and waterproof, and they give you a little spray to deodorize it or something.
Disinfect
that one.
Okay.
Disinfect. So just because it is washable, it still surprised me that you do wash it.
Yes, you know me too well. and to be honest, it has sat there, like despite the fact that, like even if you don't turn this thing on, if you stick your dick in this thing, it feels fabulous. It feels wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I totally understand why people buy fleshlights.
Sorry, what is that?
Oh, a fleshlight is a non-mechanical, it's like a flashlight.
Oh,
but it's got a fanny on the front of it, and you can stick your knob in that.
Right, okay.
It's sort of like one of these things, but without all the motors and all the cleverness.
Right.
So even without all the motors and cleverness, this thing still feels fantastic to stick your wang into. But since I finished the test, I haven't really. Well, I have got it out because me and the Colonel here, we wrote a song about it and called "Sweet Jean the Wanking Machine," which
is a lovely song. We'll put a link to it on the.
Could you do a little rendition? Just a little. What's the
Sweet
chorus?
Jam, the wanking machine. You rub me up the right way, if you know what I mean. Sweet Jam, oh my gosh, I just never knew a wank could feel so posh.
I love it. Excellent.
We'll put a link to the sound for
it. It is actually a really good song, but we took the device out and actually I sang this love song to it on stage.
Beautiful.
At the comedy shows that we used to do as the Shonky Brothers. And right at the end of it, gave it a kiss. I gave it a little kiss.
Sealed it with a kiss.
Some,
I love
lipstick
it.
On it.
Yeah.
But so,
so that's the only time I've used it. It has really just sat there because this is a wank you actually have to plan ahead for. It's like
this is interesting. We were talking with Dr. James Martin earlier about mindfulness and meditation, and the fact that even though
I love this link. This is interesting.
even though you know that if you could just take 10 minutes aside, go lie in bed and meditate, you know you'll feel better afterwards. Just like you know you can go to your bedroom with Real Touch, invest in the time, you know you feel great afterwards. But that doesn't mean you do it. Like it's not necessarily integrated with the rest of your life.
As opposed to the meditation thing, though, when you plug Real Touch in for the first time, it goes through a pretty terrifying 2-minute warm-up routine where the motors like spin up to full speed. And it kind of reminds you of sticking your dick in a blender. And so you actually need a bit of fortitude of boner to persist from that point.
You don't have to be there for that either, do you? Like you could turn it on and go make some toast.
Imagine you left the covers off and it just like ran across the floor.
Is it with the technology where it's connected to the woman on the other side, but you were also saying it can just connect to like a porn film, can it? And whatever's happening happens to you?
So the interesting thing about it is that so what they need to be able to do is, in the case of the porn, they need to be able to send video, audio, and a synchronized data stream that can, some poor person has sat there in front of this porno and coded every motion that the woman has done, so that, you know, including tightening and loosening and which way the belts are going and all this sort of stuff.
Wow, yeah.
What a horrible job. But with the...
I think that would be a dream job for some.
Really?
Coding that, don't you think?
No.
Really?
No.
Be boring.
It'd kill it. It'd but kill yeah. the
There's
porn
something for everyone. Like, really? You know, you meet some people.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Tell me about, in terms of coding.
Oh, well, just one second.
Just to
finish that thought.
Yes, yeah.
The teledildonic part of it, and this is that's the name of the field. Teledildonics is an actual, that's a discipline in robotics. In the teledildonic sense, where you're having sex with someone far away, they wanted to partner with Skype or with one of the other video chat services to be able to do it. But none of those video chat services were actually able to send a synchronized third stream of data. Yeah. So they actually had to invent their own protocol. And so they own the intellectual property on a synchronized video, audio, and data stream, which means that presumably when RoboSurgeon 2000 comes out that's doing stuff like remote surgeries, they may well have to license the same technology that's been polishing my knob.
But the company itself, I've since read, is like Real Touch is not making Real Touch anymore. They had some kind of fallout with
real problem.
It wasn't a happy ending from what I hear.
I think Real Touch might have run up against one of the harsh realities of the internet, which is that people don't pay for porn. Mm. But I haven't really followed it since.
From what I read, there was a supplier supplying a certain part who there was a licensing issue with it, and they just couldn't get it for the cost they needed or. Huh. Something strange.
Oh, there you go.
You'd be those tank tracks.
Very sad to hear.
Yeah.
Oh, those
supply
tank tracks.
Was too busy with their military, contracts.
I'm just
going to
have that image in my head for a long time. Tank track, Johnny.
Well, I mean, if you go buy a fleshlight, you can buy like there's 10 different designs or something. Mm-hmm. So you can either choose to have a wavy Johnny or a ridgy Johnny or a like there's... these alien ones that have like all sort of like little nodules all over them and they all feel different.
I am
to
a
the
babe in the woods as far as this is exactly. In terms of the coding aspect of all of that though, and obviously a lot of the technology that you're looking at now is, obviously a result of really good coding. What do you think about this movement towards teaching coding as a different language at school to kids?
I wasn't aware that there was a movement of that.
There is.
It seems to make sense. I wonder, God, I don't envy the job of teachers because a teacher today has to prepare kids for a world that's 15, 20 years away. The kind of things that I'm thinking about because of the sort of work that I do, I've got a nearly two-year-old son, Max, gorgeous kid, awesome dude. Mm. Max thinks anything that makes loud noises and goes fast is super-duper cool, and he's not wrong. Because he loves his cars and he loves his motorbikes, right? Max, so
what daddy loves.
Well,
that helps.
Lawnmowers. Daddy hates the fucking lawnmower.
He loves the blower.
He loves cars, leaf blower. Oh, yeah. So in 3 years' time, maybe less now, Elon Musk reckons he's going to have a self-driving car on the road. In 5 or 6 years' time, like 2021, most auto manufacturers reckon they're going to have some kind of self-driving car on the road by then. So I'm going to say, let's say 10 years from now, self-driving cars will be very common. And I'm going to say by the time Max turns 16 and has the ability to go and get himself a driver's license, that will probably necessary thing to do.
No, yeah.
You'll be able to, cars won't be a product, you won't own your car anymore, cars will be a service. You will pick up your telephone or whatever the hell we're using by then, smartwatch, retinal jigger, whatever it happens to be.
Just put your wang in it.
Stick your wang in it and it just orders you a cab. Genius. Write that down. Max is probably not going to ever need to learn to drive a car. Most of his friends probably won't bother. You're seeing it with millennial kids today who live in the city. They just don't. They don't get a car. They don't get a license. For our generation, getting a car was this magical moment of freedom where suddenly, instead of being cooped up in your home, you could get out and see your friends and party with your friends and do all this sort of stuff. Today, kids are hooked up to their friends 24/7 on their smartphones. They can get around with public transport. You add self-driving cars to that mix, there's nowhere that they can't get by themselves in perfect safety. They don't have to park the car.
Like an average 17-year-old can't afford to get an Uber or a cab around.
Right, but it's going to be so much cheaper because there's no fuel costs. There's very little servicing costs. They'll all be electric, right? So they'll just go off and charge wherever they charge. And there's no driver. So many of those
overheads are reduced.
They're
just
gone.
Yeah.
These cars will be worth 30 grand.
I'm actually very surprised by how many young people do use Uber.
You're surprised by how many?
How many, yep.
I'm surprised that anyone uses taxis anymore.
Oh, no, but I'm surprised that it's viewed as like a, almost like a pretty good, you know, like if the tram's running late, you just get an Uber.
That's true, but it's a good 30 or 40% cheaper than a cab.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, yeah, it's a really funny thing because when Uber first came out, every driver I talked to was like just singing the praises of Uber. It was like, oh, it's so much better than taxis and this and that. But most of these guys never drove taxis. That's the reality. Mm. They went into the market as a casual. They're doing something else. They've got a new car, so they
and let's also remember, like this is part of Uber's strategy was come in, give unbelievably good conditions to get heaps of drivers on the road so that their service takes off. And then once you've got, you know, once there's a demand for it and there's, you know, there's lots and lots of work, screw the drivers, like screw them down.
Well, they did. They dropped their, they gave them a 30% decrease in wages pretty quickly of late.
Oh, all sorts of stuff. You keep an eye on what Uber's doing. Uber is a, like in business terms, a pack of cunts. They are fucking assholes. They effectively have an illegal service that they just push in where it's, you know, people want it because the taxis are even worse. But they threaten journalists. They do all sorts of horrible stuff. Right. They keep a they have a screen where they can track where you go because you have the Uber app on your phone and stuff. And they used that to threaten a journalist who wrote a bad piece about them.
Really?
Like, yeah, yeah. This goes on and on, like the bad things that Uber does. But the other thing, if you're an Uber driver, Uber has publicly placed an order with Elon Musk and said, give us 500,000 driverless cars by 2020, please. Like, what better a signal is that than to say, screw these drivers, we're just going to keep you guys around as long as we need you.
Yeah. So,
anyway, sorry.
I know it sounds harsh, but take the driver out of it and you think about it from a customer perspective. So when Uber started, the drivers were getting paid more and the passengers were paying less.
Yes.
That is it's better for everyone. And the taxi industry cried foul because their license plates, which were worth $500,000, were depreciating in value. And you're like, but hang on, you were the ones who inflated the value in the first place. You called for the industry to restrict the amount of licenses.
Yeah, which therefore artificially restricted supply, which means none of us can get a fucking taxi when we want one. Exactly.
So the taxi industry fucked themselves in the first place. Mm. They inflated the price of this stuff. And all that happened is that the customers paid more, the drivers got less, and there was this big gap in the middle where somebody was getting money, but it wasn't me. And it wasn't the guy driving me. And that's why everyone's angry at the taxi industry. And that's why Uber took off so quickly, because it seems fairer. And I think now, as you say, they're starting to strip back what the drivers are making after this sort of honeymoon period. And I'm starting to talk to a lot more drivers who are a bit more disgruntled about the whole thing. And,
At the end of the day, though, if anyone I know goes to take a taxi, I say, what the hell are you doing? Yeah. Because it's just Uber is a better service.
It's just cheaper.
At every single step of the way, it offers a better service.
Cheaper, safer. It's accountable. You know, like if you take an Uber and something happens, it's on your GPS. It's on your phone. It's tracked.
Yep. You never have to give your credit card to some dude who might skim it and send the numbers off to India.
Just a quick question. Do you guys know what your Uber rating is as a customer?
Mine is 5.
5.
I've never looked. I imagine it's probably just gone down 3 stars.
That's really funny. I remember one of my friends saying he was in an Uber and he was talking to the driver and they said, oh yeah, we rate you as passengers as well. And he said, oh, is there a way that I can check my rating? And the guy said, oh, yeah, if you just open the app, I'll show you how to do it. And he's like, oh, 4.5 stars. That's pretty good, isn't it? And the guy was like, oh, no, sir. Oh, no, sir. I mean, essentially what that tells us is that you've had 100 good trips and one atrocious trip. You know, like that's a one star in there somewhere, because everyone wants to give 5 stars.
Yeah.
You get the 1 star in there, that will take you 1,000 trips to get back up to a 5. Like anything below, like a.
So what do we reckon he did? Spewed in the cab?
Well, he knows what he did.
Really?
Yeah. he can pinpoint where it went down.
He knows exactly where he got his 1 star. That's
but
hilarious.
It started.
Care to share? What did he do?
Mm.
He spewed in the cab.
Oh dear, dear, dear.
This was the same man who taught me a great lesson. I won't say who it is, but he. He had this method. He always wore leather jackets, and if he had to throw up in a cab, rather than throwing out the window, which would make the cab messy, he'd do it down the sleeve of his leather jacket, and you could actually hold your arm up at a certain angle where the vomit would pull around your elbow, and you could get home without soiling yourself or the cab.
You say that's repulsive. To me, that is a degree of community service and thinking of others.
So thoughtful.
That I would never display.
Really?
Yeah, if I'm gonna vom, oh my god, my whole body goes into that.
Yeah. There's no thinking about the jacket.
I'm gonna stop this taxi from getting soiled. I'm gonna just vomit down my elbow.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's really impressive.
And what else, Loz, in terms of other products that you think are pretty impressive?
Products.
Over the last 3 months, because we've got the Real Touch, obviously, that's a standout.
So that was prompted by me, but maybe you think there's other important things happening in the universe?
I guess I'm the sex bot guy now. That's okay.
Obviously, you've driven a lot of fast machines, be they cars or motorbikes, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, McLaren, the Formula One team / exotic supercar maker, put me and our auto specialist, our car driving specialist, Scott Colley, in a helicopter, flew us out to the Yarra Valley and let us loose on some of their new sports cars.
They look pretty amazing from the picture you posted.
Jeez, work sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was the 540C and the 570S, which are the lowest end, the crappiest cars that McLaren makes.
So only $500,000?
$400,000. Well, one of them is $350,000. So,
steel.
Oh, yeah. Only a one-bedroom flat. Fancy that.
The other one's $418,000.
Right.
They worth the money?
Oh, God, no. God, no. They're beautiful cars. They are beautiful cars inside and out. They make you feel special. The doors go up instead of out, which, frankly, to me...
is a little bit... Back to the Future?
No, Back to the Future, they're the gull wings. They go...
Right, okay. They go out.
Up like wings, whereas these ones sort of lift up vertically.
Oh,
like
cool.
This. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to me, if you're paying a lot of money for a car, that is probably the most important thing you can get out of your car is doors that go up.
Impressive entrance at an event.
Oh, my God. I felt like a fucking rock star until I actually tried to get out of it because they're very low to the ground.
You weren't in a skirt, were you?
I forgot my underwear that day. And
now you're in the tabloids.
The official photographer... needed his macro lens, let's just put it that way. Wonderful cars, twin turbo engines, 540 and 570 horsepower respectively, which...
Just give me, I mean, I know you've compared it well to sort of your family sedan and what that effectively means, but comparatively to your little postie bike. That you rumble around on. Does that have even one horsepower?
I can't tell you what a postie bike makes. I would suspect a postie bike probably makes a similar amount of power to the Royal Enfield that I just pulled up on tonight, which that's about 27 horsepower.
Right, okay.
And that putts along quite nicely.
Yep.
I believe a partially sick Commodore would probably beat me in a drag race on that bike.
Yep.
But motorcycles, it's just a bad idea comparing anything to motorcycles.
Okay.
They are just betterer. And this is the kind of, this is the difficulty for me. Like these cars you pay $418,000 for and it will get you from 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 3.5 seconds, right? 1, 2, 3, bang, you're at 100 k's an hour. I can buy an $18,000 motorcycle that'll get there in 3. Like, just if you're a performance enthusiast, cars make no sense. They're huge and heavy, and you can't, there's so many things wrong with them. Like, you go out in the twisty roads. This is what I like to go out in the twisty roads and drive as if I'm on a racetrack, right? Go as fast as I dare. If I'm on a motorcycle and I come up behind some car in the twisties, I overtake the car, it takes me blink of an eye, and I'm gone. If I'm in a car and I come up behind someone in the twisties, that's pretty much the end of my fun. It's much harder to overtake in a car.
Yeah.
They're bigger, they're wider, they just don't accelerate as quickly. Mm. So even in these McLarens, we came up behind some traffic in the Black Spur outside Healesville, and that was the end of our fun.
That was it, yeah.
So it was absolute torture for Scott, who's Scott's our primary car writer, and he's only 21 years of age, so most of the insurance forms on the really fast cars say you have to be at least 25.
Mm.
So what happens is Scott gets these cars and then we get the insurance form and it's like, well, you can't drive them. Loz has to drive them, so you go and sit in the passenger seat with Loz while Loz sits there and whinges about how this $500,000 car isn't as good as a 20 grand motorbike. It's pretty, it's exquisite torture for Scotty, I know it is.
Yeah.
that's not to say I don't enjoy driving these things. And I think with a bit of luck, McLaren will give us one for a week or two instead of on a launch, so that I can go away and make a video of it, and we can take it right out of town, way into the countryside, and actually
see what it can do.
Yeah, give this thing a bit of stick. It's but I find cars. You can
whinge
in general,
about it in some open air.
Yes. Yeah, I'll do that. Well, I won't whinge about it in the video, because at the end of the day, these are dream machines. I felt like that day, getting in a helicopter, go to the Yarra Valley, drive McLarens, I felt like I was living someone else's dream.
Yeah.
And I do try and respect that with my work. Like I try, with motorcycles, I'm happy to let all my prejudices shine through, because that's an area of passion for me. But when it comes to cars, I'm not going to shit on the McLarens.
But it's the same. Like, you didn't want to put your penis in the real touch, but you had to put yourself in the mind frame of someone who would want to put their penis in it.
That's a good way of putting it, Colonel. Yes.
It's all about the sacrifices we make for our jobs.
That's
right. Yeah,
exactly.
Tell me about, because I know you've had a bit of time with the Tesla P85D.
P90D, actually. P90. You got to drive the 85D.
Yep, 85D.
Yeah, 90 shits on the 85. So
tell
as someone
it, because
who...
you've driven a lot of great cars, obviously. So what did you think of it?
I haven't driven that many great cars. The McLaren is far and away the most expensive thing I've ever driven, and it was, you know, it was a magnificent car. It handled beautifully and all that sort of stuff. The pure shock factor of the Tesla, that's pun not intended. The pure shock factor of that car is what really gets me. Like that's probably the most impressive thing to me as someone who's interested in kind of futurism and all of that sort of stuff. Getting in a P90D, it's just, I mean, I stole your line when you drove that thing and came back and just said, in every conceivable way, that is the best car I've ever driven. And I drove the P90, and that's just what I've been saying to people, is you can't find a way in which it doesn't shit on any other car you've ever been in.
Comfort, convenience, just everything. It's just so well thought out.
The touch screen on it, simple things like that, like huge touch screen that works as well as your iPad does. And like, we get in so many of these freaking cars that have touch screens now, and you hit a button and it,
and you have to whack it, don't you?
Yeah, it feels like you're in a...
It's like doing the self-checkout at Woolworths. Yeah. And you push a button and you wait like 4 seconds for it to respond. And by that time, you've pushed 6 pumpkins.
Exactly.
You've got to call the attendant over to cancel 5 pumpkins, please.
Yeah. So the touch screen's perfect. The fact that it's a neural network. Do you know about this shit? Like, if you...
No.
Oh, my God. If you drive up to a speed bump in the Tesla and you, because it's lowered suspension, but it's got hydraulics, so you can hit a button and lift the suspension up so that you can glide effortlessly over that speed bump.
That Tesla
will learn that there's a speed bump there, and next time you go past that speed bump, it will do the same thing.
It'll automatically raise your suspension.
Wow.
And here's the really scary thing.
It's like driving a cloud.
All the other fucking Teslas will learn that as well, because it phones home. And with this autopilot feature that they've...
That's a little bit creepy.
Yeah.
Ah, like driving an alien.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Have you heard the... You know about the autopilot function, right? This is the closest thing you can currently buy to a self-driving car is the Tesla P90D. You click once to enable cruise control or twice and it starts driving itself. So it's like adaptive cruise control that slows down and speeds up according to what the cars in front of you are doing. Plus...
Wow.
It's got cameras that look where the white lines are, and it steers to keep you inside the white line. So there was a story this week where a guy did 400 miles without touching the steering wheel in the United States. It can change lanes for you if it decides that it's lane's clear. And
does
then
it use
every time,
Waze or something like that, or is it its own thing?
Yeah, it's got GPS. GPS
right.
is part of it,
mm-hmm.
But it also has a bunch of cameras and sensors on the car itself.
Wow.
So...
And you don't choose how fast you want to go, you choose how many car lengths you want to be from the vehicle in front, and it just keeps you that distance. And if someone slams their brakes on, it just stops for you.
That's amazing.
And it's
incredible.
Like, in terms of reaction time and stuff, it's better than a human driver. And this is where we're going, obviously, with autonomous cars. But we had a chance. So if you drive one of those in the Bay Area, around San Francisco, there are like probably one in every 10, 15 cars on the road is a freaking Tesla over there. They are so common. So the roads around there are really...
How much are they?
The one we drove was 260 grand. But right, you wouldn't believe the money in and around San Francisco at the moment. It's just insane. The roads around that area are really well mapped out. Mm. But there was only probably a handful of Teslas in Australia with this learning feature, with the autopilot feature when we drove one in Melbourne. And so it was making mistakes.
Mm.
And every time you had to take the wheel and go, whoa, 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 actually you're steering me towards a curb, the car would learn and all the other Teslas would learn. So it's teaching itself and all the other Teslas on the road how to manage Melbourne roads.
Which is a much better system. Like, we fuck up on the road. Like, you've got to learn the same lesson. You've got to learn the same lesson. We're not talking. We're not communicating about that stuff. Mm.
The fact, worst I'm that often happens. Keeping it to myself. Yeah. Very quietly. Yes, I did run into that curb. Shush, shush.
Yeah. So, look, you've told us a bit about the Lightning motorbikes and the Tesla. Like, what's... Have we been lied to about the realities of the possibilities of sustainable electric vehicles?
Sustainable and electric vehicles are really two different concepts, because the electric vehicle is really only as sustainable as the electricity you use to fuel it. So,
yep.
So there's an argument to be made that an electric vehicle in Melbourne that's powered off coal, you know, that spews a whole bunch of shit into the air. If you charge one off solar, different matter. And it sort of depends on the city that you're in, what the makeup is of the power generation in that city. In terms of electric vehicles, they are 100% on the way. In fact, so many new technologies at the moment are being driven off the back of the lithium battery revolution, which has sort of come in the last... I don't know, when was the first time you had a lithium battery in your mobile phone?
iPhone, 2008.
Something like that, yeah. So it really hasn't been that long that, you know, before that it was nickel cadmium and lead acid and all these other different kinds of batteries. Lithium has changed everything. It's so much more power dense. It's so, the life cycles are longer. It does explode a bit. That's probably not an ideal part about it.
The recent plane crash, they reckon, was caused by a flaming battery.
No shit, I didn't hear about that.
Mm.
But just the fact that lithium can get so much power into such a small space, this has enabled things like drones and multi-rotors, you know, the things like that to happen, because like that's not a super clever technology, having four props on a airframe. It's just that they've never been able to carry enough power to sustain flight for long enough to be worth bothering about.
Mm.
Whereas now that there's lithium batteries, you look at how that segment's taken off. That's insane.
Mm.
And electric vehicles as well, like lithium is the perfect, it's the best thing we've had yet. So we've suddenly got cars like the Tesla that can do 400 miles on a charge. You've got electric motorcycles with batteries that are sort of, I don't know, what would you say, about a foot and a half square, that can do 300 kilometres before they need a charge.
Mm.
These are becoming practical vehicles.
See, it was interesting too. I was up in Violettown or going through Euroa. There's a Tesla charging station at the Maccas on the freeway. And you look at the Tesla maps on their website, so like, right, by the end of next year, it's this big red line up the east coast. They're like, right, you can drive all the way to far north Queensland.
Mm.
Or, you know, you look through Europe, you know, through America, it's like, it's happening. Like, the infrastructure's already paid for, it's already planned. This
rollout's happening.
Is petrol dead?
Mm.
Is petrol dead? No. I mean, petrol still is... You can drive a certain distance and then replenish your fuel in a couple of minutes and go. And there's a subset of types of travel where you need to be able to do that, like long-distance trucking. They're probably not going to replace that with electric. Oh, well, actually, that's totally not true.
Yeah. Charge times, like, this is only, a couple of years into into drives, and the charge time's 45 minutes, which is enough time to have a couple of dim sims, to take a shit in the truckie stop. Like, surely in 2 or 3 more years, that time will come down to 15 minutes or...
Yeah, less. Well, the interesting thing, I was talking to this absolute lithium battery genius and complete maniac of a man in Santa Cruz called Luke Workman, who used to work for Zero Motorcycles, and he's a battery specialist for those guys. And he pointed out that, he had a great stat. I wish I could remember it. It was something like 95 or 99% of the money that's ever been spent on lithium battery research has been spent in the last 12 months. Like, wow. So if we think, and none of the results of that research have come out. Like, I think Obama dumped $6 billion into electric vehicle battery research as part of the stimulus bill. And is petrol...
We're going to see a lot of changes pretty quickly then, do you think?
I don't think it's going to be super quick, but we've already seen the first... that the first wave of practical electric vehicles that you can buy for a reasonable price and that are out there now, the Nissan Leaf, the Chevy Volt or Bolt or whatever the hell it's called over in the United States, and, of course, the Tesla Model 3 has just launched at $35,000.
Biggest product launch in the history of the universe.
Nah, that's rubbish. There's a whole bunch of caveats around that. It might be the biggest... electric vehicle pre-order launch or something like that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Because I heard there's like 350,000 pre-orders in a week for a product that's $30,000.
Like, I don't know. I'm only...
beat that in a week.
Apparently there was a Mercedes that beat that or something like that. I don't know. I was talking to a motoring journalist. Maybe he was wrong. I'm not sure. I shouldn't shoot that out of the air without actually having the knowledge myself.
We need the bullshit detectors on, though. That's important.
Yeah, that was a huge product. And the thing is, like, that Tesla, that $35,000 Tesla is going to launch with the same autopilot gear in it that the $260,000 one has. So that's seriously incredible.
It's amazing. And will it have the same like suspension lift thing going on?
Probably not.
Maybe not. No,
it won't be a sports. Yeah. I mean, the P90D is kind of a sporty saloon.
Right, okay.
I mean, one of the incredible things about that car is that it does 0 to 100 in 2.8 seconds, which...
And yet it weighs over 2 tonnes.
Weighs over 2 tonnes.
There's it weighs even... more than a large four-wheel drive.
Whoa.
And it goes faster than a supercar.
It's amazing.
Yeah, there's about maybe 3 or 4 cars you can buy that are faster to 100 kilometres an hour than a Tesla. And you're spending millions of dollars for those cars. Mm. These are the LaFerrari, the hybrid Ferrari, the hybrid Porsche 918, and maybe the Veyron. They might get up to 100 k's an hour as quick as the Tesla. But the Tesla's not a sports car. It's a freaking family saloon.
It looks like a sedan. Yeah,
it's
like...
a saloon. Oh. It's a big, luxury it's spacious, car.
It's comfortable. Yeah.
There's wow. soon
like
driving
an armchair.
Be,
yeah.
There's going to be electric sports cars soon. And those things, like there's the Rimac, the guys from Rimac who made the Concept One, they're going to do a 1,000 horsepower electric car. And you know what I said before about like horsepower figures are kind of... a little bit
warped,
deceiving when it's electric. Like this will be that. And there's another group in somewhere in LA, I think, that's doing another. Yeah, everybody's just going, yeah, well, let's make a fucking 1,000 horsepower car because you can. It's easy as piss when it's electric. Yeah. This is something that Luke Workman was saying to me. Imagine a fucking petrol engine, all right? So first let's imagine an electric engine. Power goes in. There's maybe 3 moving parts, electromagnetic field, spins a rotor inside a bunch of magnets. There's your torque, right?
Don't you need any gears.
No gearbox, chains, none of that stuff. Now imagine a petrol engine, right? You twist the throttle on a petrol engine. 2 things happen simultaneously. First of all, a set of butterflies open at the top of your carburetors. Secondly, a bunch of fuel injectors squirt, you know, a certain prescribed amount of fuel down the throats of those carbs. Then there's a number of pistons going up and down inside cylinders with valves opening, exhaust valves and intake valves. Yeah. And then those are turning a crank that then goes you know, sends a signal through a fucking gearbox, which gearbox has all these different ratios because the amount of power that you make doesn't necessarily correspond to how much throttle you're doing, because petrol engines have a rev range that they work happily in. There's a power bit. It's a fucking Rube Goldberg machine. It's like you're putting a ping pong ball on the fucking on a set of dominoes that fall over, and you know, these petrol engines are ridiculous. And I say this as a fully fledged card holding petrol head. I fucking love petrol engines. But electrics are better. They're so much better. Mm. The idea of making ridiculous power with an electric engine is easy. You just get a bigger electric motor.
Mm.
You're just battling weight of the batteries, aren't you?
So if I'm just little old me and I want to buy a sustainable car, do I buy a hybrid or do I just wait and buy an electric Tesla?
Tesla 3.
A sustainable car.
Mm.
What your number one priority is, saving the planet?
No, my number one priority is comfort. And then my second priority is spending less on petrol. Let's put it that way. Maybe not even being sustainable. Maybe it's just I want my car to cost me less.
Yeah.
When I drive it in crap traffic.
Mm. Well, at the moment, lithium batteries are expensive. Like if you get a big enough lithium battery to make it a practical car, the battery's going to cost about 60% of the total cost of the vehicle, which cripples electric cars from a kind of from an economics perspective.
Mm.
Don't buy one yet. I would say wait until the Gigafactory is up and running.
Mm-hmm.
That will bring the price of batteries down pronto.
Right.
That's the whole idea of building it, is to get massive, scalable, cheap batteries.
That's another Elon Musk initiative.
Mm. Yeah. Yep. That's how he's going to build the Model 3s.
And Tesla walls as well.
Tesla power walls, yeah, all that sort of stuff. So all of those... Anything with large-scale battery packs, mm-hmm. like electric vehicle-sized battery packs, those will come down in price
significantly,
harshly over the next 5 years. So, don't. If you want to save... I did the sums once on an electric motorbike.
Yeah.
You had a Zero SR and a a Kawasaki 250. No, it was a Zero S and a Kawasaki 250. And the purchase price of the Zero was, you know... let's say $4,000 more than the Kawasaki. And if you factor in the fact that electrics need almost zero maintenance, never need oil changes, you never have to pay for fuel, obviously. I mean, it's about 3 cents or 2 cents to fill up your vehicle at night on your PowerPoint.
Mm.
And you can charge it for free at work, which is nice. I worked out that you'd probably need to do about 100,000 kilometres on a motorcycle before you would break even.
Right.
Which isn't bad, because that's, what, a year or something?
Oh, not for motorbikes. It wouldn't make sense on a motorbike. It'd probably take you 5-6 years on a commuting motorbike.
Okay.
With cars do tend to do more Ks than a bike. I haven't done the sums on a...
I looked, this was years ago when I looked, well before the electric car technology was where it is now, just at like a hybrid, like a Prius or like a hybrid Honda or one of those ones. And it was, you know, 10 grand more for that car than the sort of petrol version.
Yep.
And when I did the sums, I was like, I'm not sure. I was a bit the same. I was like, I'm not sure this works out actually.
Yeah. Well, maybe in over terms 3 years.
Well, I think if you were buying the car outright, so you weren't paying interest back on a loan for that extra 10 grand, it'd work. But if you factor in you're getting a car loan, then it makes no sense at all. But you're
getting a car loan for the electric or the petrol.
Yeah, but you're paying 10 grand more for the...
Yeah. So you've got to factor the interest of that 10 grand.
That snowballs, doesn't it?
Mm.
I think the other problem with electric vehicles is if you buy one now, at this, you're still kind of an early adopter at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And things are advancing so quickly.
You'd be outmoded pretty quickly, you think.
Yeah, you might...
Be a bit like having the first Ericsson mobile phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might just... get rid of
your big brick pack.
So that's almost something that stops that I know that's a problem for motorcycle companies like Zero, because there was a time there when like every 12 months they would release a product that would blow their previous one out of the water, and it made customers nervous that, oh, shit, if I go and buy this new amazing thing, there's going to be something amazinger in 12 months.
Yeah.
But they've spent sort of like the last 3 years, they settled on a platform. They just went,
that's what we're doing.
We're not gonna shit on all of our old products for a little while. You know, I think give them a couple of years and they'll probably come out with something.
Yeah, funny. So that's, I mean, that's stifling innovation.
Could be.
Market itself, the market of people who are trying to be innovative, is stifling the very market that's trying to innovate for them.
It's a really difficult one, because all these things can't happen in a vacuum. They've got to be successful businesses, and they really are starting with the Zero SR, DSR, and these bikes that they're making motorcycles that would meet 95% of the conditions that I, you know, that most people need out of a bike.
Mm.
It's just, when you want to go on a long, fast ride or something like that, they can't do it. They can't go more than maybe 100 and something Ks if you're riding really hard without a charge. There's a few things still holding it back, I guess.
So in terms of renewable energy, it wasn't so long ago, like 5 years ago, we were being told that that solar energy, wind energy, tidal energy couldn't sustain us. Do you still believe that, or do you think that the technology is catching up to the point? Are we reaching the point where it makes economic sense to be to turn to renewable energies?
I don't think there's anyone who would still say that economically it's not possible. But in the case of Australia, like you get deeply into politics, I think. And look, I don't really understand Australian politics all that well. But as far as I'm aware, like it's a.
I don't think anyone does.
I'm not sure that you've got much to understand there, Lawson.
Well,
we've got more sun than pretty much like. Germany seems to be doing pretty well with their limited sun.
But Germany hasn't got an entire economy that's supported by coal exports massive amounts of jobs and stuff. Like, I mean, the fact is, you put in solar panels, you can't employ all those people just to go around and wipe the solar panels at the end of the day.
They can build more.
Mm.
They can maintain them. They can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing with
the lines, like you can't store energy. The energy has to be close enough that we can run a line to feed it into the grid.
This is another big problem: is transmission of this stuff. Like, the other issues with renewable, short of geothermal. Geothermal's different, but with solar, with tidal energy, with wind energy, you get the power generated when the conditions are right for that, you know, when the sun's out or when the wind's up or whatever. But the fact is that the way that our electrical grid works is that the power stations have to scale up and scale down their production in order to...
We need lights on when the sun's down.
Exactly. Yeah. So all this solar energy that gets built up, unless you find a way to store that, like, and grid-level storage, like, we're not talking, like, a Tesla Powerwall might, you know, two or three of those might run your house.
Mm.
Mm.
But can you imagine how much battery you would need for grid-level storage? That's a ridiculous amount of...
Yeah, you wouldn't if every house and every factory took care of their own storage. Decentralized.
Yes, but again, then you're talking about a situation where all of these big employers just go out of business. And maybe they get replaced by like solar panel installers or repairers or something like that. But politically, that's a really tough thing to get across.
Sure.
I think, I mean, as you say, the other issue is like where the power is generated to. And I think Australia has just above Adelaide, so, you know, a few hundred k's up north of Adelaide, there's like this giant resource of geothermal there that we could use to power the country for 1,000 years or something like some fucking amazing resource. But it's several hundred kilometres north of Adelaide, and that just makes it really inconvenient. It's
a shit of a place. I've been there.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know, there are problems with sustainable power at the moment, and there's some other there's some people working on stuff like we were talking about.
Like, this is so new. I mean, that's the crazy thing. Like, it's so new. The technology's so new. The money's only just started flooding in for research and for real life testing. Surely, in another 10 years, we'll be. You know, it'll be a very different story. I mean, they're talking about exponential growths in terms of solar output and the money that's going in and the results we're getting out. And the more we invest, surely the more we'll get out.
Yeah, it's just, I guess, for the last 100 years, we've had this stuff that you can just pull out of the ground, run through a refinery and then run everything off it. You can run cars, you can run anything off oil.
And you can take it with you.
You can take it with you. That's
the amazing thing.
It's portable. It's very cheap to get to. And all of these other schemes, all of the other ones, I've looked at this chart recently. I can't quite remember. There's a couple that are actually cheaper per unit of energy than petrol, but those tend to be stuff like solar photovoltaic and I think maybe wind energy in some cases can be cheaper, but those things are, as we just said, like, they don't get generated at the convenient time, so But like you say, we're really only maybe 20 years into the global warming age where we're actually giving a fuck about this stuff. So, and there is a number of incredibly clever people out there throwing lots of time and energy at this kind of stuff, and God bless them.
Mm.
So maybe we will see some renewable power in our lifetime.
Be good if we did.
Let's hope so. Look, we've ticked over time, and it's disappointing because we haven't even touched on your amazing career as a internet flartist. But I'm hoping there'll be another time we can discuss that. I'm sure your fans will still be there.
Well, as it happens, this podcast is recorded in my backyard, so I'm usually available to come out for another episode. We might get you in again then, Lars.
Doesn't sound nearly as cool as the studio, does it?
No, sorry. Pop in and disturb your dinner.
It is a studio. But it is also in my backyard. So the commute, literally. The commute's not terrible for me. If you guys were to...
it's sustainable.
So look, we'd just like to say a big thanks to Loz Blaine for dropping in and sharing your knowledge. And as you are an emerging technology specialist, we'd like to touch base with you on an ongoing basis and find out what else is tickling your doodle.
What's emerging?
Peachy, it's been a delight as always.
Very nice, thank you. Lovely.
It's a shame to call it a night, but we have been going a while now. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for downloading. Not tuning in. I fixed that.
We're still looking for challenges for the kernel. And now that we've heard of such interesting technologies, perhaps some of you have got some really wacky challenges.
Hang on, what kind of challenges are we talking about?
The Colonel's looking forward to a few projects. Now that he's stopped building his wood-fired pizza oven, we have to give him some more projects. He's happy to do some personal experimentation on our behalf.
Oh, really?
So if you come up with any ideas. I know, it's just said like the evil.
I try not to tell my brothers these things.
Really?
I think you should take on a landscaping project.
In your backyard.
Yeah, mate.
Make the entrance to the studio extra pretty.
Fuck off.
Please post your ideas on our Facebook page and let us know what you think. And if you've got any great emerging technologies you think we need to talk about, put them up. We'd love to see the links. And
let me know as well. Yeah, exactly. Fire them through to loz@gizmag.com because if there's something out there we haven't covered, we'd love to get our finger onto it.
Excellent. Good.
PeachandTheKernel.com or check us out on Facebook. Ladies and gentlemen, we love you all. Thanks for downloading us. Thanks for getting involved with the conversation. We love you all. And have yourselves a fantastic week. Bye-bye.